Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Who thinks they're entitled to sex? Well, the rapist thinks he's entitled to sex. And that's the straight line that I draw from the ideology of the sexual revolution to Harvey Weinstein.
When the pastor in whose house I lived called Hitler from the pulpit the Redeemer, the organist said to me, whispered into my ear, he's lying, he's betraying our Lord.
I can tell you that I am absolutely committed. In fact, I would rather die than give up the Book of Concord, because the Book of Concord confesses the truths of Holy Scripture.
Uber drivers around the world love listening to Issues Etc. on demand while we're waiting for a ride request.
I've been interviewing people for, well, going on 20 years now, and I guess it's my job then to interview people. And one thing I've learned is you need to read what they write. When they write, you need to read it so that you can ask them about their thoughts, ask them about the subject, whether it's a book or an article or a paper or something like that. When I come across a headline in the Washington Post, it's a feature in the style section on Rod Dreher, the author of The Benedict Option. And the headline says he's a combative, oversharing blogger who speaks for beleaguered Christians. And then I say, well, the reason they're featuring him is because of The Benedict Option. And I start reading the article, and it appears that The Benedict Option is not that big of a subject here. I wonder, did the interviewer read the book? We're going to be talking about that feature in the Washington Post on Rod Dreher, author of The Benedict Option. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A little bit later, we're going to talk about two issues, a pro-abortion litigation tactic in the Kansas Supreme Court that is very important for you to take note of, another way of getting around the Kansas legislature and therefore around the will of the people. It might be in your state as well on the issue of abortion. Then we'll talk about Harvey Weinstein's employment contract that apparently arranged for, or at least allowed the possibility of him committing the kind of crimes and indiscretions that he did, as long as he paid the company exorbitant fees, ever rising with each incident, up to and including $1 million for every incident after four, I believe. They seem to anticipate some very bad behavior there and profited from his bad behavior. Margot Cleveland of The Federalist will be our guest. Joining us to talk about a feature in the Washington Post on Rod Dreher, author of The Benedict Option, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
That headline, other than its length, I've noticed that headlines get longer and longer in the age of the internet. What struck you about that headline in the style section of the Washington Post?
Gosh, we could do a long conversation just about the headline itself. First of all, you asked, is this a piece about Rod or is this a piece about the Benedict Option? It's quickly very clear once you start into this piece that it's really not about the Benedict Option. And I didn't see anything in the piece that made me think the author had read the book. Perhaps she had read a few arguments about the book, but I didn't get much evidence that she had read the book. This is really a piece about her reaction to Rod the human being, perhaps after having read a few culture wars type subject discussions on his blog. But back to the headline. Rod Dreher is the combative, oversharing blogger who speaks for today's beleaguered Christians. Let's work our way through that just for a second. Now, listeners need to understand that Rod is a very close friend of mine, and we have known each other since the mid-1990s when I was introduced to him early in the age of email by our mutual friend Frederica Matthews Green. And Frederica, in addition to being a nationally known author and commentator in her own right, Frederica is also the wife of my family's priest during the 12 years that we lived in Maryland and attended Holy Cross Orthodox Church, just on the outskirts of Baltimore. I mean, so you can see you've got some real personal connections here. In online conversations, I watched the Benedict Option material develop, you know, over a space of 4, 5, 6 years, because he had used the term in an earlier book, just kind of in passing. And then as he began to think of the implications of it, this book began to form in Rod's mind. If people think Rod is combative today, they should have seen him 10, 15 years ago. I mean, this is the guy that during a period of time, during, I believe it was the first Iraq conflict, the one when it was a question about whether France would involve or even endorse it or whatever, Rod, in a television appearance, called them something like cheese-eating surrender monkeys or something like that. I mean, Rod—
I remember that.
Rod has a really strong flair for words, to say the least. But because of all the events in his life in the last decade, he is an infinitely more kind of calm, balanced, self-questioning. I mean, it's hard to read anybody these days who so openly questions his own motives and thoughts as much as Rod does in print. So the combative, now oversharing blogger, gets down into the heart of what her column about, which is the fact that he has written a trio of books, two of which are really the same book, part one and part two. By that, I mean The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming is really part one, and How Dante Can Save Your Life is part two. It's really one book, and it's about his decision to move home to Louisiana and when his sister is dying of cancer. And these are very, very intensely personal books. The interviewer literally cruised by Baton Rouge, according to Rod, on her way to another story in Mississippi. Rod agreed to meet her out in a coffee shop. He thought the coffee shop would be quieter than some of the normal hangouts that he frequents in Baton Rouge. It turned out this coffee shop turned into the metaphor for her entire piece. And this is the oversharing part, as someone who just talks about himself and talks about himself. So this is a long passage, but it's important for listeners to hear this. This is how Rod and this location is described. It takes all of 10 minutes for him to unload his emotional and philosophical struggles in a wannabe hipster coffee donut slider brew house, a metaphor for the source of his existential pain and familial estrangement. He got fancy, his family did not. We're here because we can't be in his home for lengthy reasons shared in emails and conversations and, oh, never mind. It's stupid loud. Coffee grinders and blaring music require Rod to semi-yell intimate moments of extreme rejection. You're so easy to talk to, he says. Perhaps, but you get the feeling that he might unload to almost anyone, and it's almost a half hour before closing in the graduate school library of his mind. Filters are for coffee and air conditioners. Dreer has none. Now, that's very Washington Post style section kind of lingo. I've always, with my students, I've described it as the Rolling Stone style of profiling from the what used to be called the New Journalism. The New Journalism became an old movement, but it's come back. So I like to call it the New Old New Journalism. And it's that whole Rolling Stone thing is, you know, it's like, I'm sitting in a red convertible with Julia Roberts, and as we cruise down the 5 in L.A., she turns and winks at me because she knows she's going to her favorite drinking hole. Yeah, like, what does that tell us about anything? You know, I mean, it's I'm in this car with Julia Roberts. Well, this whole passage is I get to make fun of Rod Dreher because I asked him to describe the heart of his work and his family crisis in a short interview that I told him we only had a few minutes for. And because he tried to jam it into 10 or 15 minutes of quick question answering, I'm now going to hold that against him as oversharing. It's really an amazing journalistic feat when you only give someone a short period of time to describe, you know, issues at the heart of his life, and then you turn around and nail him for oversharing. But that's really what this piece was all about. So the final part of the headline, I told you we could go about the headline a long time. The final part of the headline, who speaks for today's beleaguered Christians? Okay, this misses the whole point. This means that you haven't been reading anything about Rod Dreher. Because, I mean, as folks who are coming to Issues, etc., second conference this fall, probably know more about him at this point, you know, than the author of the Washington Post. I call it a column. I guess it's an opinion or interpretive essay or something, as the author put it. Oh, never mind. Rod, right now, two different sections of beleaguered Christians are mad as heck fire at Rod. If anything, right now, his book, which we've discussed a little bit on this on the show before, his book is so controversial because he doesn't speak for large numbers of beleaguered Christians. It's controversial because he's claiming to be ahead of the curve of what's happening next as American religious believers try to wrestle with post-Christian America. The religious right is furious with Rod. In large part, I mean, the entire Trump world of Christianity is furious with Rod because he's essentially saying the religious right approach, the moral majority approach, didn't work for two reasons. One, the modern church isn't doing much to actually teach Christian morality. We've sold out and turned into a vanilla milquetoast bunch of people who are scared of the doctrines of the faith. Plus, it didn't work politically. And if you think Trump represented victory, he said, then you're totally out of your mind. So the religious right is furious with Rod. And at the same time, within evangelicalism and Catholicism in particular, the kind of left-of-center, edgy, evangelical Catholic left is even madder at Rod because he's opposing church compromise on the very doctrines on which they most want to get in line with the culture, most of which concern marriage, family life, sexuality, etc. So how can Rod speak for today's beleaguered Christians when about half or more of American Christianity is furious with the man? You know, and that's even just among the world of evangelicals and Catholics. So I was laughing after just reading the headline. The article itself, as I said, is this, I called it a drive-by profile, which I was going for kind of the image of a drive-by shooting. This was literally a drive-by profile in that it was produced, most of it was produced out of one person's reactions to the quick interview with Rod that the Washington Post requested. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Why the style section?
Oh, the style section is because it's about books and people, and because they wanted to be able to do this in a more colorful way. I mean, don't forget the degree to which the whole style section evolved in the 60s and 70s with Sally, Ben Bradley's wife, Sally, whose last name is escaping me at the moment. It developed into this kind of semi-Rolling Stone, very free-flowing, evocative, colorful, and yes, opinionated section. You don't go to the style section of the Washington Post expecting to get a straightforward presentation of the news.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a feature in the Washington Post on Rod Dreher, author of The Benedict Option. A frequent guest here on the program, Frederica Matthews Green, was also quoted in the feature. We'll see what Terry thought about that after this.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about a feature in the Washington Post on Rod Dreher, author of The Benedict Option. Terry, you mentioned her before, but if you would give us your thoughts on what little they included of Frederica Matthews Green. They did quote her briefly in the Washington Post piece.
Yeah, this is really crucial because the reason I wrote about this at Get Religion, I had held off writing about Rod quite a bit. By the way, my brain has continued to spin. It's Sally Quinn, of course, is the wife of Ben Bradley, who was such a major player as a superstar of the Style section. And of course, we know a lot more about her and her religious beliefs these days, and a key figure in terms of Style section writing about religion in the last couple of decades or two. Anyway, Frederica is quoted in the piece about Rod. It comes right at the end of the long quote that I read earlier, in which she is quoted as saying, "He feels emotion strongly right there on the surface. He's almost childlike. He doesn't have any shame." Well, Frederica was just appalled, you know, when that section of an interview was pulled out, because her whole point was, with all that Rod has been through, Rod, as described in the book Dante, How Dante Can Save Your Life primarily, Rod has been so open about his spiritual struggles with himself and with his family that the whole point of, Frederica said in a post that she put up on her own blog, Frederica stressed the whole thing is that Rod has dealt with so many of these issues in confession and in counseling and in his own writing that at this point, he doesn't have any shame talking about them because he's already dealt with these issues. He's made his decisions. He's living his life based on those decisions. And he's not ashamed of them, and he's not apologetic about it. So thus, he doesn't mind just coming out and saying things like, "I was totally wrong about that. I had to get that totally straightened out. It took me hours in confession. It took me hours talking to my pastor. It took me hours talking to a counselor. And I know how to handle that now. Rod is very upfront and blunt when he talks about those kinds of things. And once again, that's turned into the oversharing Rod Dreher aspect again. When Frederica's entire point, and she, as any good writer would, in Frederica's case, we're talking about a woman who's written lots of magazine profiles and has a long and interesting journalism career of her own. Frederica, when she finished the interview, she quickly whipped out a notepad and jotted down all of the points that she had made in the interview just to kind of have them clear in her mind for later. So when this is the only thing she's quoted saying in the Washington Post article, she was appalled. That was important for Get Religion readers. And the reason I wrote the post was we very rarely have a chance to get on the other side of the reporter's notebook or recording device and see the article through the eyes of someone who was interviewed for that article and get their impressions of how what they said was handled. I tell my students all the time in journalism classes, the single most important skill in journalism is the ability to accurately quote and paraphrase people with whom you have a lot of disagreement. In other words, when you go into an interview and you're interviewing someone who you already know is going to be saying a lot of things that radically disagree with what you yourself personally believe, the greatest and most important skill in journalism is the ability to hear what they said, to feel some sense of empathy, and at the very least, get the words and the facts down straight and be able to write an article that when that person looks at it, they can go, yeah, that's what I said. That's the most important point I made. I told her that was the most important thing I had to say, and sure enough, it got in the article. That's not what happened here on multiple levels. And because of the fact that we have the Post piece itself, we have Frederica's kind of mini memoir of what she had to say, and we have Rod's own commentary. It's kind of an interesting chance for listeners to kind of get behind the journalism process a bit and see it through the eyes of other people. In this case, Rod's own eyes, Frederica's eyes, and now my own eyes as someone who has read and taught his share of journalism basics through the years.
I have one thought on the headline, and that is, it's just the preposition near the end of the headline that he speaks for. My impression of Rod, and I've been interviewing him since the Crunchy Con days, is his audience is not necessarily the culture out there in the world. It certainly is through his writing in the American Conservative. But the stuff that's near and dear to his heart is addressed to the church. He speaks to Christians. He's not attempting to be some sort of spokesman for Christianity. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I tell people when I read articles about the Benedict option, I have a couple of things I always look for. One is I always look for references to Václav Havel of the Czech Republic and those tremendous waves of change that shook Eastern Europe in the post-Soviet era. I look for references to Václav Havel because the religious right and a lot of people are accusing Rod of saying that it's time for Christians to run away from the culture and go hide in little tiny communities and just give up. Now, think of it this way. When you think of Václav Havel, and if you think of now Saint Pope John Paul II, do these men strike you as people that ran away and gave up?
No.
Yet they are the people that Rod uses in his book as examples of what he calls heroic and creative minority activism within a community. He's trying to get the church to realize the moral majority was a myth. The percentage of Americans who are actually interested in living out a doctrinally conservative and intense form of faith. The Gallup poll for years has actually several decades, the late George Gallup Jr. told me, for several decades, he's pointed out that only between 20 and 22, at most 24% of Americans seem to be practicing a traditional form of faith that affects their daily lives in any really substantial way. Well, that's part of what Rod is saying. We are a minority within this culture. We can expect, increasingly for legal reasons, we can expect to be treated as a minority. Now, that doesn't mean we run away and hide, but that does mean we're going to need to have strong, tight communities that help us live our lives as Christians and kind of defend what we believe, and most of all, practice a form of the faith that's vital enough that we can hand it on to our children. But then Rod goes one step further. Rod says over and over in interviews about this book and elsewhere, look, you have nothing to give the culture if your faith isn't actually being practiced in your own churches, in your own families, and in your own community institutions. If you don't have a strong, vital, shareable faith, what good are you to the culture anyway? So Rod is saying the Benedict option is about finding and creating institutions that have the strength to stand for traditional faith during an era when they can expect to be beat up a little bit by a post-Christian majority culture. They have no option to run away and hide because it's not going to be possible to run away and hide. I mean, for a lot of legal reasons that he unfolds in the book, running away and hiding is not an option. Some people have said, in particular, I've talked with journalists who've said that Rod is saying that we should all just flee the major institutions of American life. Rod is saying something related to that. He's saying that based on interviews and his own research, that there is evidence that in some crucial core institutions related to education, law, medicine, maybe journalism, whatever, these institutions are growing increasingly hostile to Christians who openly stand up and defend their faith. Now, you can argue with him about whether or not that's an accurate representation of the facts, but I think it's really hard to try to tell the man that he's not pointing out some problems that are real and worth discussing. So Rod is not saying we should flee these institutions. Rod is saying we have to have some strategies on how to handle life when people are going to attempt to push us out of these institutions. A perfect example of that would be medicine. We continue to hear of things in Europe and Canada and whatever where you're seeing people who are practicing Roman Catholics being told that, in effect, you're not going to be able to practice in the state medical system of England. In Canada, you're beginning to see some things related to that. Well, you know, that there's that old saying that whatever happens in Europe turns in, you know, if you catch a cold in Europe, we'll have fevers here later in America, or whatever that cliche is. Rod is saying, here come some undeniable trends. What are you doing to prepare your church, your home, and your children to deal with these trends? In some ways, that's the opposite of dropping out. It's preparing to try to remain alive and functioning within such a society.
Finally, Terry, I think what was missing, and I think you agree with me as well, what was missing in the style piece was apart from the visuals, I thought the visuals were interesting, standing before his icons, things like that, was, the way you put it, the style piece failed in the case of Rod Dreher to get religion. Explain that with a minute or so.
Well, they talked about religion in this piece, but they didn't seem to capture the essence of this man, especially after all he's been through in recent years. Toward the end of my piece, I said, readers don't know anything about Dreher's confession about his family's painful past, a subject explained in the post piece, without knowing this information about his religious beliefs. This is life and death material, and I'm not just talking about this life in the here and now. Now, backing up again, I just spotted the other key phrase. I said, you see, it's impossible to understand Dreher and his story without facing how he is attempting. And then I interjected, Rod would want the word attempting in bold. Attempting to live out his religious convictions as an Orthodox believer, as a sinner aware of his own need for repentance and healing. Now, I don't know how you interview Rod in recent years about these events in his life without getting a sense of his own awareness of his own struggles, his own faults, the mistakes he has made in the past. That even gets down into how much his political beliefs on a lot of things have changed, in the sense that he's aware of the political mistakes he's made in the past and the political, not just mistakes, the degree to which he's been so overly confident and cocky and pushy about certain political beliefs in the past. He's ended up boiling things down to where he doesn't fit in either American political party. And he's come to the point where Christians are first and foremost going to have to say, how in my life, once again, in the life of my home, in the life of my own parish, and in my own life, and in my life with my children, how will I defend the basics of Christianity in this culture and hand them down to the next generation in some form that has a chance of surviving? There was a big part of Rod's story that was left out of the Post piece, and this was the other reason I decided to write about it. Rod has published what he wishes he could add as an epilogue to How Dante Can Save Your Life. And it's an amazing essay about how in the final weeks of his father's life, the patriarch of his family, the man who's at the center of the entire drama of Rod's life and struggles, how toward the end of his father's life, they were completely reconciled. And his father apologized to him in an amazing scene for the things he had done to Rod and for their misunderstandings. And Rod was able to accept that apology and to apologize back. And, you know, the drama then of his father living through the final weeks of his life after this reconciliation. Now, how can you fault Rod for over-talking about his family story and then leave out the conclusion, which is the healing, which is kind of the restoration and the wonderful symbols of love that unfolded in those final weeks of his father's life? How do you leave that out? Maybe it just didn't fit with the snarky tone of the rest of the article.
Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
So don't depend on the Washington Post feature on Rod Dreher to tell you what the Benedict option is all about. In fact, I got a far better prospect for you. You can actually meet and hear Rod Dreher himself. Get it from the horse's mouth, making the case for the Benedict option at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference next week. That's November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Attendance at the conference is limited to 400. Registration is $120. It includes meals on Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. Child care is free, courtesy of the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education. You can learn more about the conference and you could register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston. On the other side of the break, Margot Cleveland of The Federalist joins us. We're going to talk about a pro-abortion litigation tactic in Kansas and Harvey Weinstein's employment contract.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
What help us ever to retain the catechism's doctrine plain?
What makes a church unique? Perhaps we should ask what makes a church faithful. Calvary Lutheran Church of Elgin, Illinois continually learns Christ's doctrine, simply explained in the small catechism. This doctrine teaches us Christ crucified, who even today comes and serves his baptized children in word and sacrament to forgive, strengthen, and teach us for daily life. This, Christ's own work among us, makes and keeps Calvary Lutheran Church faithful. Visit us at clce.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How do we continue faithfully to confess and practice our Lutheran faith in a culture of secularism, pluralism, and relativism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is the 2017 edition of Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 edition.
Orphan Grain Train is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During November, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Orphan Grain Train. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.